Welcome to Shnayim Mikra. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom. We are continuing in our study of Parshat Vayigash here at this wonderful program sponsored by the Orthodox Union, hosted at UU.org. And in the first podcast on Parashat Vayigash, we heard the beginning and most of Yehuda's plea to have the regent of Egypt, which he does not know is Yosef, take him instead of Binyamin as the slave and allow Binyamin to go back to his father, offering the reason that father would surely die if Binyamin were not to return. We pick up at that point in Perek Mem Dalet Pasuk Lamed Aleph, V'haya kir oto ekiyen ha-na'ar v'meit. He repeats this notion, that this idea that as soon as Yaakov sees that the son is, that the young lad is not there, he will die. V'horidu avadecha tzevat avdecha avi b'riagon sha'ola. And the comment that he attributes to Yaakov, which again, as I mentioned in the last podcast, we never heard Yaakov directly say, which is that if Binyamin were to not return or something were to happen to him, he would die a sorrowful, painful death. He now turns that around and says that that will be on our shoulders. That we, in other words, if we are not to do everything possible to get Binyamin back, including offering ourselves in this place, then we will be the ones to cause this anguish to our father. Which means there is now a second plea that he brings up. At no point does he plead for Binyamin qua Binyamin. He pleads for Binyamin as the son of Yaakov, and now he pleads for himself and the other brothers because of what the terrible guilt that they would have for causing father such a painful death. And now, why does Yehuda step up to the plate? Ki avdecha aravet ha-na'ar me'im avi le'mor. He explains why he, uniquely and more than anyone else, would bear the responsibility for the father's painful death, because he acted as a guarantor of the Chaaravat Hanar Me'im Avi Le'mor. And what did he say? And that is indeed what Yehuda had said back at the beginning of Perek Mem Gimel, when he brought brought Binyamin down and agree, and it got father to agree, I will be a sinner to you, whether it means that I will be excommunicated from you, I will not be in Olam Haba, I will not be buried with you, however we understand it, it means he is accepting some sort of an eternal, if you will, damnation from his father if he is not successful in bringing Binyamin back. Now, v'ata, yeshivna avdecha tachat anar. So this is the conclusion, this is what he's asking. Tachat anar, eved adoni. So let me, your servant, sit in place of the lad as a slave to my master. V'anar yale mechav. Let the lad go up with the rest of his brothers. And now the plea becomes more emotional than legal. Ki eich ele alavi, v'anar inenu iti, pen erev vara asher yimtza et avi. How could I possibly go up and see my father without the lad? I could not stand seeing the evil that would happen to my father and that I would be the cause of. So it now becomes a very emotional kind of address. Yosef here reacts. Yosef could not, restrain himself due to or in front of all those who were standing in his presence. Now we know that Kol HaNitzavim Alav are his courtiers, as you see here. Vayikra hotziu chol ish mi'alai. So he said, get everybody get out. Not everybody meaning the brothers, but rather everybody but the brothers. V'amad ish ito b'tvaday Yosef alachav. Now Yosef, of course, has many people around him, both his aides and his protectors and likely wine tasters, but also other people coming to plead for food and plead for other things. He throws everybody out and he says, nobody else can be here except my brothers. He doesn't call them his brothers. I get everybody out except these men. I need to talk to them privately. Now, we have to step back for a second and take a look. What does a courtier believe or think is happening when... What does the courtier think is happening when he comes outside and is thrown out, and Yosef is left alone with these 10 men, these 11 men now, because Shimon is there? What does he think is, how are they to understand what's happening? So that's one perspective we have to look at. The other piece we have to look at is, what is it that caused Yosef to really break at this point? So the Rishonim are divided on the phrase, l'chol ha'nitzavim alav. L'chol Yosef l'tapek l'chol ha'nitzavim alav may mean that he didn't want to break down in the presence of all these other people. So he wanted to be alone with his brothers. The other possibility is, as some of the Rishonim suggest, is that other people were bugging him and saying, come on, let him take the kid's place. They were giving him advice and saying, have some compassion here. And it was becoming too much. In other words, it wasn't so much that Yosef wanted to be alone with his brothers, but what caused Yosef to break was all of the pressure of everyone standing around him. There are numerous other pieces to that, and interested readers advised to look at the Rishonim on Perak Mamhei Pasuk Aleph. Nonetheless, Yosef here is about to reveal himself to his brothers. And again, we have to wonder, when all of the other members of the court are thrown out and any other supplicants for food are thrown out, and Yosef is alone with these 11 men, and everybody knows there's been some sort of a history with them where Yosef is acting kind of strange, asking about their family and demanding a brother be brought down and imprisoning them and then feasting with them, there clearly is something very special going on. I don't know what would be going through the mind of a courtier who's now inelegantly tossed out while Yosef meets with these 11 men, but it certainly must be raising a lot of curiosity in the court as to what's going on. One can only surmise that Yosef either has to now reveal why he has been playing so many games and with these brothers and share with them what's going on, which indeed is the case, or whether he has some secret reason for wanting this lad and why he's not willing to let Yehuda take his place. We don't know. We're standing outside of the court, but one thing is quite clear. Everybody is very interested in what's going on inside the room, as we will find out later. Now, what happens at this point? So everybody hears that Yosef is weeping. Yosef withstood weeping twice earlier in the story, and now he cannot withstand it anymore, and he breaks down. Vayomer Yosef Elachav, now what's happening inside? Elachav Ani Yosef. He turns to them and he says, I am Yosef. Ha'od Avichai. It's a very strange question. Ha'od Avichai. The whole time we've been talking about whether father will be able to stand the coming back without Binyamin, what will happen to father, etc. So clearly father is alive. And now Yosef turns and says, Ha'od Avichai. So those who interpret Ha'od Avichai not being an interrogative question, but more of a rhetorical question, is in, how could father still be alive all of these years? There may yet be another nuance to that which we'll look at later. But there is another way to look at Ha'od Avichai, because Yosef perhaps recalls the conversations a little better than the brothers think. And perhaps Yosef remembers that the conversations that I mentioned in the last podcast did not take place the same way that Yehuda presented them. So it could be, indeed, that the brothers feel some sort of remorse. Perhaps father has died in the meantime, and Binyamin is all that's left of that part of the family, and they're trying to spare him. And they're lying to Yosef, because as we saw in the last podcast, Yehuda was not forthright about the earlier conversations with Yosef either. So, indeed, it may be the case that Yosef is really asking, is father really alive? There is yet another way to look at it, which we'll look at the end of this podcast. Of course, the brothers were shocked, and here we have the famous midrash, Oilanu miyom adin, oilanu miyom atochecha. Yosef turns and says, Ani Yosef, and who could possibly answer him when everything suddenly becomes clear to them that Yosef is not dead, Yosef is not enslaved, Yosef is now the king of Egypt, and Yosef is the one who has been putting through all of them, through all of these paces. Now they're frightened and they move away, and he has them come close. And he says, I am Yosef, your brother, and I'm the one who you sold to Egypt. This is where the famous comments of the Rashbam come in to play from Parshat Vayeshev, the Rashbam's famous approach that says that the brothers indeed were not the ones who sold Yosef, although they intended to. So when Yosef says, you sold me, how does the Rashbam explain it? It says, you're the ones who caused me to be sold. There's an easier way to read that, which is, that Yosef was, of course, thrown in the pit. The next thing he knew, money was changing hands, it was being pulled out. He had every reason to think that the brothers are the ones who sold him. But so that's, he's saying it from his perspective. Either way, that's how he describes himself. I am Yosef that you sold to Mitzrayim, which, of course, is not really a great way to start a rapprochement. But he continues, V'ata, al te'atzvu, don't be sad, v'yichar be'enechem, and don't be angry. Kimachartem o'tehena, I mean, don't be angry at yourselves and start getting accusatory, as he had already heard Reuven say to them, I told you not to hurt the lad, and now it's coming back to us. He says, God sent me here in order to bring life. God sent me here in order to save the country with the interpretation of dreams, etc. Why? There's already 2 years of a famine. There will be another 5 years without any plowing or harvesting. In other words, I'm the one who came and saved the country. And really, I saved the whole Middle East, and that includes, of course, our family. And God simply sent me ahead of you. Which means, by the way, that Yosef already at this point, and probably earlier on, saw that the destiny of the family was to migrate to Egypt. It's to give you some sort of a remnant, a way to remain alive. To give you a large remnant. In other words, to give you a source of life. This is how Yosef now describes himself to the brothers. He doesn't say, I'm Yosef, forget about what happened. He says, no, be aware of what happened. I'm aware of what happened. You're aware of what happened. But please be aware, this is all God's hand operating. Which may mean we're all puppets in this divine drama. Or it may mean that you intended one way, but God turned it a different way. Either way, this is where we're at. And, of course, we don't yet hear about the reaction of the brothers to this and how they respond, but we will hear about that in the next podcast. One short comment, which is really a huge, huge piece, but due to the nature of this forum, we'll keep it brief. Rav Yoel Ben Nun, in the premier issue of the very prestigious Tanakh Journal, which now had its 50th issue published recently, wrote the lead article, which caused an uproar, as many of the things that he writes, which are very innovative and very insightful and very cutting edge, on the issue of Yosef and his brothers in this piece, but it really starts much earlier. When Yosef came down to Mitzrayim, Yosef, we know, had tremendous feelings of filial loyalty for his father. When Yosef came down to Egypt, he already became a steward in Potiphar's house. Why didn't he even send a message to his father that he was okay? And this is a question that the Rishonim all ask when Yosef is already king. And here he's king for seven years of plenty, and 2 years of famine. At no point does he call Yaakov and say, Yaakov, I'm okay. Why? What's that about? Why isn't it that Yosef reveals himself right away and lets Yaakov know that he's safe? And has Yaakov come to Mitzrayim, or at least let him come up to Canaan to see his father? He lets his father wallow in such sadness and some mourning for all of these years. How are we to understand that? So I'm going to suggest share more of Rabbi Nun's approach in the coming two podcasts. But for right now, we have to remember a very important rule about reading narrative. Is that we, and this is something I outlined in my first volume, Between the Lines of the Bible, that we, the reader, are in a sense omniscient, because we know what this one thinks and what that one thinks and where this one's going and where that one's going. But the players don't. So when Ishmael leaves with Hagar to go out into the desert, we know that they're going to a different destiny. As far as he knows, he's being sent out to die. When Yitzchak goes with Avraham up to the Akedah, we know what's going on, but Yitzchak doesn't necessarily know what's going on. So therefore, we have to remember to take into account what each player knows. So think about this till the next podcast. What did Yaakov know or think about Yosef's fate after he sent him to Shechem? Far more critically, how did Yosef understand what had happened and Yaakov's role in that? And one very big hint is what has been the family history for the past two generations about brothers who are contesting remaining within the fold. We'll pick it up in the next podcast. We'll review the third Aliyah and then share more of Rav Binun's very innovative approach to understanding Yosef's rapprochement with his brothers. Everybody have a wonderful day.